First, I wish to warmly thank Alain, Ariel, and the co-organizers of this colloquium for giving me the opportunity to present our results on the targeting of different interneuron types by thalamic nuclei and on its consequences on cortical network dynamics. So the experimental work has been done by Audrey A. in my lab, and Jérémy Naudet made a modeling study in Philippe Faure's lab to assess the results that we obtained. Both labs are in the Institut Neurosciences Paris-Seine nearby. Cortical neurons are diverse, but regardless of how many neuronal types should be or could be defined, they can be grouped in three broad classes that are described here. You have excitatory glutamatergic neurons that are the most numerous of cortical neurons. Most of them have a pyramidal morphology, so I will call them pyramidal cells. Pyramidal neurons have richly spiny dendrites, and they fire action potentials. During a firing discharge, there is adaptation in frequency and amplitude of the action potentials. The rest is GABAergic inhibitory interneurons, among which fast-spiking interneurons represent about 50%. These fast-spiking interneurons fire brief spikes, with very little adaptation of frequency or amplitude along the discharge. They have a spiny dendrite, and they express parvalbumin. The other type is adapting interneurons. They are named after their firing discharge, which adapts in frequency and amplitude along the discharge. As for fast-spiking interneurons, adapting interneurons have a spiny or sparsely spiny dendrites. They do not express parvalbumin. An important difference between fast-spiking interneurons and the rest of the neurons is that they have fast membrane time constants, much faster than the two other types. Although adapting interneurons are diverse, they exhibit collectively much slower membrane time constants than interneurons. So the three types of neurons are interconnected. Pyramidal cells excite adapting and fast-spiking interneurons. Both interneuron types project onto pyramidal cells, and they, at certain level, inhibit each other. I think at that point, I should mention that I am aware that fast-spiking interneurons are surrounded by perineuronal nets. And also that the fast discharge and the fast properties in general of fast-spiking interneurons are due to a very special set of potassium channels, and that this expression evolves during development, actually during the critical period, and their maturation, at least for intrinsic properties, is more or less terminated at the end of the critical period. So the results I'm going to present have been obtained in the adult rat, but of course, this is supposed to be evolving during the critical period. And my aim today is just to provide you with a clear example of the usefulness of having two different populations of interneurons endowed with different kinetic properties. So, sensory thalamic nuclei project onto the cortex, and they connect excitatory neurons, and they also connect strongly fast-spiking interneurons. The consequence of the kinetics of fast-spiking interneurons is that it leads to a fast and powerful feed-forward inhibition onto the pyramidal cells. The outcome of this is that the pyramidal cell response is curtailed by this feed-forward inhibition. This is exemplified here on the excitatory postsynaptic current, which is curtailed by the inhibitory postsynaptic current, and also for the depolarizing potential, which is shortened by inhibition. So these sensory nuclei are called specific because they convey a specific information for this specific sensory modality. The thalamus also comprises so-called non-specific nuclei, like those of the midline thalamus. And these non-specific nuclei convey higher order, more integrated information. So because I don't like very much the term non-specific, I think it's a bit misleading, I will choose to call them contextual nuclei. And so we will be characterizing the contextual projection to the cortex. The reason why virtually nothing is known on the functional properties of these projections to the cortex is that the projection path does not go through the medial lemniscus, and that it is cut in thalamocortical slices. That has more or less precluded so far the study of the circuits, and this is why we used optogenetics to study these non-specific, well, these contextual thalamic projections. So here you see an example of an injection of a lentiviral transfer vector for the expression of channel rhodopsin within the rhomboid nucleus. The rhomboid nucleus is in the midline thalamus. It's called RH. Here I will talk about RH. You see that expression of channel rhodopsin is essentially confined within RH. And well, there is a little bit of overlap in the Reinier's nucleus and in the centromedian nucleus, but it's essentially confined. We are confident that what we study is actually the projection from the rhomboid nucleus. Transduction of thalamic neurons results in, does not affect their properties, their typical properties of thalamic neurons, like here, the low threshold calcium spikes surmounted by a burst of sodium spikes. Activation of channel rhodopsin through light, so light pulses activate channel rhodopsin, which excites these thalamic neurons here. This is due to an inward current, activation of an inward current. So in cortical slices, activation of rhomboid axons results in excitatory postsynaptic currents, which are glutamatergic. They are blocked by CNQX-APV, which depend on presynaptic action potentials. They are blocked by TTX. All of this derives from the recording of LAU6 pyramidal cells. So why choosing rhomboid? Because it converges with the ventrobasal somatosensory relay nucleus, the projections of the ventrobasal nucleus. So they converge onto the parietal cortex. So here you see that the injection of the rhomboid, the channel rhodopsin expression in this negative image. Here, injection of the same channel rhodopsin vector, expressing vector, results also in strong labeling of the VPM and VPL nuclei that compose the ventrobasal. The recording site is strictly limited to the parietal association cortex. Here you see the distribution of channel rhodopsin expressing rhomboid fibers here. And in this area, you see that the vertical laminar distribution of the fibers for both the VB and the RH is similar to that reported in other areas. So for rhomboid fibers, they make a broad peak in layer 6 and a minor sharp peak in layer 1. For the VB sensory projections, they peak in layer 4, so this is normal density of a sensory projection, and they exhibit a minor peak in layer 6. So we first recorded the responses of this VB and RH nuclei in layer 6, where there is a peak density of both projections. So we stimulate either RH fibers or VB fibers. So here you can see that responses to RH photostimulation results in responses that have a much slower decay than those to stimulation of VB fibers. So this is shown here. The amplitude of both responses is roughly equivalent. And you can see also that the onset kinetics do not really differ between the two types of inputs. We also recorded inhibitory postsynaptic currents. And so here again, you see that responses to RH have a much slower decay than responses to VB input stimulation. Okay. This is this time associated with a slightly with a larger amplitude of the response to VB than of that to RH. So in other words, the peak is simply thinner when for VB stimulation than for RH. Importantly, here, and as opposed to EPSC kinetics, the onset kinetics are much slower for RH than for VB stimulation. This is true for both onset, delay to onset, and for time to peak. And this suggests that there are important differences in the recruitment of inhibitory interneurons by the two types of inputs. So we simply looked for mechanisms that might explain the different kinetics of responses to the two types of thalamic inputs. So we investigated three possibilities: that synaptic properties of the two types of inputs may differ. In other words, that there might be a slow component in the thalamocortical EPSCs triggered by contextual inputs. Second possibility, that laminar connectivity patterns may differ, so that, for example, rhomboid inputs might strongly activate another layer that might in turn create a feedforward excitation within layer 6 that might explain also that the response is prolonged in this layer. Third possibility, that the cellular targets within layer 6 differ for the two types of inputs. So first, thalamocortical transmission events, we characterize them in layer 6 pyramidal neurons. So first, to study these thalamocortical events, we had to get rid of the very intense polysynaptic excitation that you see here following the initial EPSC. So simply to get rid of that, we decreased stimulation intensity to a level where we could get almost pure response, purely decaying response, which is due to thalamocortical excitation, to therefore getting rid of recurrent cortico-cortical excitation. And so we could isolate pure thalamocortical EPSCs. There is a high rate of failure, but still, it is possible to study them. So we studied the AMPA and NMDA component of these EPSCs. As shown here, AMPA at minus 70 millivolts, NMDA at plus 50 millivolts. You see here that each component is blocked by respectively APV or CNQX. Well, we found no obvious evidence for any prolonged component. I mean, nothing special here. So what we measured is that for AMPA, we measured the tau decay and single channel as well as for NMDA. And those values that we obtained are very similar to those reported for VB inputs. So there's no big difference as for the AMPA and NMDA ratio here. More specifically, we also looked at potential presence of NMDR2C or D subunits, which are less sensitive to magnesium block at negative potential, and which may result in a prolonged excitation, especially at hyperpolarized potential. And as you can see here, the NMDA response is completely blocked at minus 70, blocked by magnesium. And also the single channel conductance of NMDA is more consistent with NMDR2AB containing receptors. So actually, there's basically no obvious difference with VB inputs, with sensory inputs. And so there's nothing to explain that the response is prolonged within layer 6. So we can exclude this possibility. Second, so VB inputs are known to excite excitatory neurons throughout layers 2 to 6, with a peak in layer 6, which corresponds to the peak of VB fiber density. Of course, it's completely unknown for RH as for most of as for any of the contextual nuclei. So to probe this laminar pattern of the rhomboid connections, we used maximal stimulation intensity, but this time we used a mix of TTX and of the potassium channel blocker for amino pyridine. So you see that if you apply TTX, you block both direct and recurrent events through the network. If you add 4-AP, then you recover the ability of channel rhodopsin to trigger a presynaptic calcium spike, glutamate release, and thus a monosynaptic thalamocortical APSC. Well, the kinetics of this APSC is perturbed, but there's very little effect under these conditions on the amplitude. So we can really probe the amplitude of the APSC and so probe approximately the density of connections onto cell types of each layer. So to map the connections onto different layers, we recorded in slices 3-4 slices in a row for each slice. Well, the quality of the labeling is due to prolonged incubation. Well, the relatively bad quality of labeling is due to prolonged incubation with 4-AP. Cells do not like it, but still, we could easily identify excitatory and inhibitory cells from the density of dendritic spines. And interneurons were further classified as FS or AD based on presence or absence of parvalbumin staining. So the results are presented here for excitatory neurons of layers 2 to 6. And you can see that the responsiveness roughly follows the profile of RH fiber density. The responsiveness is minimal in layer 4. Here is the amplitude of the responses, and here in the black bar, and the open bars represent the percentage of unresponsive neurons. So this, you see that responsiveness is lowest in layer 4, which is the major recipient layer of sensory thalamocortical inputs. And the response is also very low in layer 2, 3, intermediate in layer 5, and a maximal in layer 6. So conclusion is that RHTC inputs prominently target layer 6, where there is the highest RH fiber density. The minor peak in layer 1 here results in modest but still responsiveness of all layer 1 interneurons, and may also contribute to the responsiveness of layer 5 neurons here, of the layer 5 pyramidal neurons that through their connecting their apical tuft. Okay, so that's it. Well, in other words, these results so indicate that the responsiveness follows the profile of fiber density, but also that there is very little chance that the laminar pattern may be able to create a strong feedforward excitation of layer 6 that may explain the duration of the response. So we focused on layer 6 to see whether there was a difference in the cellular targets of each type of input. And indeed, we found that it's the case. So you can see that RH inputs, of course, target pyramidal neurons, but they also strongly target AD interneurons approximately at the same level as pyramidal cells. In contrast, they only weakly excite fast-spiking interneurons, as you can see here, and this is summarized in this sketch here. We also confirmed that VB inputs have the opposite preference for the interneuron types. So you can see here that responses of pyramidal neurons and FS neurons are roughly comparable, but that the responsiveness of AD interneurons is really minimal. And so this is summarized here in this cartoon, which is the classical study, the classical story with sensory inputs, which has been well shown in primary sensory area, but so this is also true in more associative areas. So next, we wanted to make sure that the interneurons we recorded are representative of the composition in interneurons of layer 6. So Perrenou et al. Made a comprehensive study of interneuron types within layer 6 and quantitative, and they reported that parvalbumin containing fast spiking cells represent about 50% of all interneurons within this layer. In this study, we have systematically stained all the recorded interneurons for parvalbumin. So I think that we can make sure, we can be sure that what we recorded are really fast spiking cells. Among AD interneurons, the most prominent part is called some interneurons. So these some interneurons are somatostatin and neuropeptide Y immunopositive, and they resemble Martinotti interneurons that are found in other layers. Martinotti interneurons are, well, to briefly explain, are dendrite targeting interneurons. So they form the major contingent of adapting interneurons. NPY adapting interneurons also make an important contribution to this contingent. And so these NPY interneurons are NPY positive, but they are somatostatin immunonegative, and they exhibit neurogliaform morphology. They are the so-called neurogliaform interneurons. And finally, VIP interneurons account for 5%, so they are really a minor proportion of those interneurons. So we performed immunostaining for somatostatin or for NPY on the recorded adapting interneurons. And you can see here that both some positive and NPY positive interneurons respond to RH input stimulation with approximately the same intensity. Regarding the morphologies, most of the interneurons recorded have this type of morphology, either multipolar or bipolar body tufted, with thick primary dendrites, which has been reported for the some type of interneuron. But some of them, some of the NPY positive interneurons, exhibit a neurogliaform-like morphology with thin and ramified primary dendrites. So we can conclude from this that we actually recorded both some Martinotti interneurons and NPY neurogliaform interneurons, and they are both responsive. So we can conclude that rhomboid inputs target both types of adapting interneurons in layer 6, which are the major types. So we can summarize these findings in these microcircuits of the contextual and sensory thalamocortical microcircuits in the cortex. So you can see that both types of inputs connect pyramidal cells, but they differentially connect adapting and fast spiking interneurons that are interconnected. I forgot to mention that both neurogliaform and Martinotti interneurons are interconnected with fast spiking interneurons. This is an important feature of the circuit here, as you will see. Now, consistent with this circuit, you see that here VB inputs recruit very rapidly fast spiking interneurons. So this is experiment again in control conditions. So when you stimulate VB inputs, you get a very rapid response of fast spiking interneurons. Conversely, RH inputs recruit fast spiking interneurons with a delay, much longer delay. And so this is reflected here. Regarding adapting interneurons, they are recruited by RH inputs, directly recruited, whereas VB inputs are not able to recruit them simply because the feedforward inhibition is able to switch down to stop any recurrent excitation of adapting interneurons. So the story is relatively simple. You have a small circuit. And the results of recruitment of interneurons by each type of input is consistent with the circuit here. So is it consistent with the rest of the results? Please note that the delay between VB stimulation and FS spiking is very short. This is due to the very fast membrane time constant of fast spiking interneurons. Please note here that rhomboid inputs that trigger spiking AD interneurons with a longer delay. This is due to the slow membrane time constants of these adapting interneurons. So you have this difference in delay, which is reflected by the feedforward inhibition kinetics that I presented to you earlier. So here you see that the onset to inhibition is different for RH, slower for RH than for VB. And this is exactly the same value. So the delay to onset of inhibition is here 4 milliseconds as for the delay to spiking, and that the delay to onset of feedforward inhibition onto upon RH input stimulation is 8 milliseconds, as for the delay of adapting interneuron spiking upon RH input stimulation. So the next is that this difference in feedforward inhibition kinetics has important consequences on cortical network dynamics. This is reflected in these graphs where our recordings are summarized. So here again the cartoons of the circuits. So here simpler is the what make VB inputs. So after the onset of EPSCs in pyramidal cells, very rapidly you have spikes in fast-spiking interneurons. This in turn immediately triggers feedforward inhibition in pyramidal cells, and this feedforward inhibition shuts down recurrent excitation. In contrast, for rhomboid inputs here, the situation is more complex, but the series of events occur in a much longer time window, as you can see here, as compared to VB inputs. This is really brief and well ordered. So after the onset of EPSCs, you have also, AD interneuron spiking, which are directly excited. At the same time, the feedforward inhibition is developing onto pyramidal cells, but this delay allows pyramidal cells to initiate recurrent excitation so that all three neuronal types contribute to the activity of the network, and this occurs in a much longer time window than for VB input stimulation. So we wanted to make sure that that there is a causal relationship between membrane time constants of interneurons and the difference in kinetics. So for this, we did a modeling study using mean field models of the cortical network. So first, we had a simplified model comprising only one pyramidal population and one interneuron population with variable membrane time constants, one thalamic input onto both interneuron types. So the model has a solution which is shown here. So here is represented in color the relaxation time constant after one stimulation of the model network. And as a function of the strength of coupling between inhibitory and excitatory populations, and also as a function of the membrane time constant of the interneuron. You see that below a certain strength of coupling between excitatory and inhibitory population, the model is unstable as expected, so that it does not return to baseline after excitation. Here the model is stable, and you can see that the decay kinetics are faster for fast interneurons and slow for slow interneurons. Here are the values of corresponding to fast spiking interneurons. Here are the values corresponding to AD interneurons. This line here is the limit between a monotonous decay and an oscillatory decay. Okay, so there is actually a causal link between membrane time constant and relaxation of the cortical network. So here we use the three population model to assess the dependence of kinetics on the different types of interneurons. So here, three populations, as described in our from our experimental work, fast spiking and so on, three interconnected, and two types of inputs called, of course, rhomboid and ventrobasal. You can see here that upon rhomboid type input stimulation, you have activity in the three model populations, and this activity occurs in a relatively long time window. In contrast, upon VB type input stimulation, you have a strong activity of fast spiking neurons, which rapidly limits the activity of pyramidal cells, and which almost precludes activity within the AD interneuron population. So this means that the model captures the essential features that enable the network to respond differentially, and so with different kinetics. So we wanted to assess the specific role of AD interneurons into the kinetic, the decay kinetics of the network response. So we varied input strength onto AD interneurons. So you can see that if RH inputs only target pyramidal cells, there is still a relatively long response, but the response is actually much shorter because of the very strong activation of fast-spiking interneurons, which, so the recurrent excitation of fast-spiking interneurons is able to curtail the response. This is clearly shown here by increasing the strength of input to AD interneurons, and you can see that by increasing the strength of input, you prolong the response. So this is due simply to the fact that these two populations are interconnected, and so that excitation of AD interneurons is able to dampen FS cell excitation by recurrent excitation through the pyramidal cells. So the next and last point that we wanted to investigate, this time it's more how the model could evolve and not only how the model reflects the experimental results. And we tested the integration of the two inputs, so we combine the two inputs into the model network. So you can see here that the response to VB inputs is increased by prior rhomboid input stimulation. So you see that first you can have rhomboid input and then subsequent VB. Look at the black line, I'm sorry. The gray line is the condition where you have only excitation of pyramidal cells, which is a bit artificial. So the black line means here that you have an increase of the response and that the two inputs effectively summate. And here is represented the time window during which summation of inputs can occur. And this time window, you can see that it's relatively prolonged, and it's more prolonged if you put into the circuit the AD interneurons. So here you see that the maximal activity is larger, and so that it indicates that there is effective summation, and so there is integration of the two types of thalamic inputs, sensory and contextual. So to summarize, so I think that these results are relatively novel because they show that adapting interneurons are not only involved in cortico-cortical excitation, but that they can also be involved in the integration of afferent inputs into the network. So it's relatively novel. So we confirm that FS interneurons are critical to mediate fast feedforward inhibition, and so that it curtails the response of the network. So this is this makes cortical response time locked to VB inputs, and this makes the system well adapted to the detection of sensory stimuli. In contrast, the response to contextual nuclei is dictated by a slow, delayed feedforward inhibition due to the slow time constants of AD interneurons. So here, because of this delayed feedforward inhibition, the network response persists much more than with VB inputs due to recurrent excitation here. that can develop. At the same time, AD interneurons are also critical because they can dampen feedback excitation of FS cells. I remind you that the interneurons that we characterized as main targets of RH inputs are interconnected with fast spiking cells, so they can do the job. And so this makes the system well adapted to the integration of multimodal information. So thank you for your attention.